Hello, everyone, and welcome back. I'm Joe.
And TJ.
And you're listening to season six of our Focus Ed podcast, where we cover all things education to help you lead better and grow faster by staying focused.
Focus Ed is a collaborative program of work with our partners from the Delaware Department of Education and Wilmington University.
Partnerships we're very excited about, so don't forget to follow us at theschoolhouse302.com for more leadership content and to contact us for leadership coaching, professional learning, and much, much more.
As always, we hope that you enjoy this episode of Focus Ed, and we can't wait to hear from you.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to Focus Ed, where we invite expert guests to join us, and we are thrilled to have Christy Valesky with us today. Welcome to the show, Christy.
Thank you so much for the invitation.
Absolutely. We're focused on work-based learning on this show today and the power that it has to prepare students for post-secondary success. So with that, TJ, why don't you tell our audience a little bit more about Christy?
Sure thing, Joe. Christy Valesky is an educational advocate who ambitiously supports students, teachers, schools, colleges, businesses, and communities with a passion for collaboration. She has always sought ways to streamline educational programs and initiatives with key business and community leaders to efficiently address local challenges. Her experience teaching, leading, collaborating, and developing solutions with industry thought leaders has led to the advancement of effective work-based learning practices locally and nationally. Christy serves on ACTE's work-based learning policy team and co-leads the monthly state leader network collaboration with the Coalition for the Career Development Network. She supports a national work-based learning masterclass with Catapult PD and was a facilitator for the National Career Z Challenge, a prize competition from the U.S. Department of Education. She has over 20 years of educational experience as a teacher, work-based learning coordinator, educator, state-level program consultant, and national leader in work-based learning. She recently published her first book, Transformational Work-Based Learning, which we're going to talk about in today's show, to support coordinators who oversee internship programs. She holds a bachelor's degree in business education and a master's degree in educational leadership. All right, Christy, we're going to dive in. First, I think it's important for you to give us your definition of work-based learning. Like, when you say work-based learning, what do you mean by that? And then I would like to talk about a few of the outcomes that you see from it that are super important.
Yeah. Well, first of all, thank you for opening that, because I think a good baseline is a great place for us all to start. And a definition for work-based learning, man, every state has their own. All these different organizations have their own. So when I think of work-based learning, I'm really taking it down. It's learning that's based off of work, but that doesn't always mean we're just having students work, because there's learning that can occur from listening, learning that can happen from interacting or trying things out, skill building, and learning from actually application. But when I think about work-based learning, I really try and focus on how we build and design these work-based learning experiences, because I think it's easier for us to make it tangible and sustainable. So three things when you're building a work-based learning experience for that quality experience is, again, remembering that learning. So we're going to do collaborative learning, meaning business and education is at the table because they each have something to provide. And we're doing the learning before, during, and after, meaning we're not assuming that every student has the privilege of having all the information that they need to be successful during whatever experience that's taking place. During the experience, that learning is clear-cut expectations that we're holding students accountable. And again, it's been designed alongside business. And that learning after is that key career planning piece that we ask students to pause and reflect. What does this mean for me? So the collaborative learning before, during, and after is element number one. Element number two is every single experience needs to connect to somebody in the field, a professional. Those connections are key for lasting success for students well beyond when they leave and graduate from school or college. And then finally, every experience is working on building a skill, either an employability skill, a technical skill, or both. It all depends on the type of experience. So collaborative learning before, during, and after, which increases professional connections and builds student skills. That's how I would define designing a work-based learning experience.
Christy, we appreciate that very much. And I like the idea of using the BDA. TJ and I often gravitate, even though we've mostly educators have learned that with the reading strategy, it works. I mean, think about most of your experiences that does encompass a 360 degree view. You've touched on businesses now a couple times in that response. And I think that's critical because with work-based learning, we are thinking partnership, partnership, partnership. Can you talk a little bit more about how schools and business can collaborate more effectively?
Right. Well, I think first understanding that each party brings something truly valuable to the table. You know, educators are in this every day and they fully understand what students are going through, how they learn, different struggles, barriers, challenges, and how to overcome those, as well as how to break down learning. Our businesses know how trends are changing, what this looks like in the industry, how different businesses within that same career field look different and have access to that network. So when you bring both of these to the table, they each have an expertise that we're not trying to spend a lot of time figuring out. But when it comes to developing out these partnerships, it's really important from an educational lens is that when we're talking to business to understand that they think differently. When they are thinking about their day-to-day, they want to help kids, but just saying, hey, it's good for the kids, isn't enough because they want to stay in business. They want to keep their doors open. So how are we approaching it that they're going to see some sort of return on investment? It doesn't mean we're using kids as leverage for some sort of financial gain. It's just talking to them from the lens of what's in it for them. They have early access. They have the ability to train a potential student, to excite a student for a career field. It is potentially their future workforce, because if they're not talking and interacting with students, who's going to know that they exist? Why would a student go into that career field? Why would they take a class in that career pathway? We know based off of research that those interactions are crucial for students to make these decisions. So from an educational perspective is when you're talking to business to keep in mind, what are they getting out of it? Because if it comes across like they're going to now be babysitting or they're going to have to spend a ton of time away from doing their job or it makes them extend their day, they're not going to be interested. So you have to make sure you're appealing to what's in it for them. Are you taking the lead with designing it? Are you asking for something very specific and tangible? And then what's the return for them?
Christy, this is a show for school leaders, and I'm probably going to get to some other questions about like your advice for school leaders who want to build some of this programming. But just to stick with the industry partner, how would you say to go about talking to industry partners? You mentioned that there's something in it for them, but I know that's not going to be the most forward thing. We're not going to knock on the partner's door and say, hey, here's what we can do for you. But I also talk to people about work-based learning all the time. And one of the biggest fears is, well, how do you build the industry partners? I didn't have that experience when I was a deputy superintendent. We had industry partners galore, but it is a huge question in the work-based learning world when administrators and school staff are like, I don't really know how to get started with building my bank of industry partners. And I think that's why they go to, hey, it's kind of like free labor, which that's not what we're trying to do here. Can you give us some language or some ways that we can approach industry partners that make sense for educators?
First of all, I'm gonna say that you have, if you're getting started and you have no one, you have to start with in person. It's easy to hang up the phone. It's easy to not return an email. It's really hard to look somebody in the face and tell them to leave. So it's easier to plead your case, or you're going to get a better shot at it if you're doing it in person. That is super time consuming, but that is the front legwork that has to happen. Once you start to build momentum, then it becomes so much easier because then you have different industry partners speaking on your behalf outside of when you ask them. They're going to talk, this is great. We had this student intern, or I got to talk to all these students and now I have students who are interested in working for me in the future. They want to do a job shadow. Like the excitement is exciting. It's thrilling for a business partner. So the first off, you're going to have to do it in person and it is time consuming and there are going to be no's, but you have to do it in person and you have to be prepared. What are you asking for? If you approach somebody from business and you have something that's not concrete, well, in the future, would you do this? it's really hard to commit to something that you don't know. We want you to participate in this hands-on career fair where we are going to provide you with some ideas, but it is critical that our students know that your business exists in our community. I think that's a key way to open the door to start the conversation. Well, why? Why can't you just say my business name? Because students need to see it to believe that it's real. They want to hear directly from you. You can tell me about your career and I can relay that, but it doesn't have the same authenticity that if it came from you, you would have. So I think it all depends on what you're asking for, because the greater the time commitment from the business partner, the more you're going to have to really show them what's your role, how are you supporting them, how is this not scary, how can you answer the questions, and why do they need to commit now? Once you have, again, had more experience, it becomes easier to use, I love the FOMO, fear of missing out. Well, your competitors are all part of this now, and we have all kinds of interest and support. And I know, TJ, I've talked to you in the past, is I had a construction company. Super scary to work with minors. So they first came in and said, we'll work with a student who's 18. Happened that year we had a student turning 18 in October. So it worked out that there was minimal time before that where they could be doing the training and it was isolated. Then because they had such a hard time recruiting, they were just not getting good talent. They were getting workers from other companies that had not learned safety appropriately. So then were a huge risk to the company. They wanted to bring in more talent. So they asked the student, which ultimately had to have parent approval, for the student to actually participate in different discussions and conversations and introductions with other school programs. So here's a student, here's one of your peers talking about it. Grew a ton of interest. They had so many potential employees. They never had that much interest before. Really grew the program. The next year, a student who didn't turn 18 until March was really interested. They agreed to look into the legality of what the student could do to still make it a meaningful experience. The year after that, they had 5 students. They couldn't take 5 students. So you know what they got? The cream of the crop. They got their first pick because all 5 students wanted their company. So then when looking for additional partners, not that we said that they didn't get the cream of the crop, but just said, understand that because this construction company has been involved, students are asking for that one by name. Would you like that to happen for your company? So then more construction companies were now interested. So it starts with one and can grow from there.
I truly appreciate, Christy, you going in the construction lane on this one. This is my world as a superintendent and being a career in technical education school district. We have seen the value of this in our community. And I appreciate you saying that, yeah, it might be a little difficult at first, but there are real needs in the community. So once we reframe this, that we are looking to build a pipeline into industry. So even if a student goes on to some form of higher ed, which all students are going to have to continue their learning in some capacity, in some field, regardless of the actual school or trade, this is critical. So I think about companies in our world in Delaware, like M. Davis. I want to say over 40%, I believe that's the last figure I heard, over 40% of their workforce is now Newcastle County Votech students. And they're a huge industrial fabrication and construction service company. And it is scary at first, but if you go through things like OSHA and so on, you can make it work. You can make the relationship work, which then leads me to this question. What are some really innovative partnerships that you've experienced that can be cited that you know that others could emulate?
You mean like types of industries?
The partnership between the industry, the business, and the school.
Well, as far as like the different types of experiences that they're offering?
Yes.
Yes. Probably my favorite one is a healthcare company who was willing to jump on board early, had a student. So the head of HR had a child of their own who had participated in a different school district's program, was interested in starting it at their company. So push forward. It really helped that he was the chief of HR. So got this going, didn't want it to be limited to just one field. So went department by department to find out which ones would be willing to take on students. Ended up taking interns in human resources, marketing, IT, physical therapy, speech therapy, nursing, inpatient, outpatient nursing, but then even decided to take it to another level. So they found success. Their staff was more engaged because it was like, it was just a different form of their work. And they felt like they were really helping somebody else interested in the field. So then they started incorporating tours, speakers. They would intentionally participate in mock interviews at different school districts. They expanded instead of just two districts, then they were doing six school districts, which that's a lot to juggle. Then they started doing it for their inpatient. So it was an inpatient facility focused on children who needed that healthcare, but they wanted their students who were anything from kindergarten or sometimes even younger, all the way through seniors in high school, to be able to have access to work-based learning. So now they were bringing in-house opportunities outside of just their facility for their own students, their own patients and taking them on tours and all the different elements, and then hired somebody who's now in charge of expanding partnerships, because what they have found is that they have inspired a future generation and a future workforce who have now returned to do the work as well as provide opportunities for more students. Is that what you were looking for? Okay. Just wanted to make sure.
Absolutely. Just because I think we think sometimes very binary or one track, and what you just described, even if it is a construction company, there are multiple different positions in a construction company, and you just relayed that. So that's perfect example of just the opportunities that are out there that are really innovative.
Well, and I think too, when a company might say no, let's say they're really concerned about liability, what about their HR department or their marketing department? I mean, students are really innovative on thinking differently about how to target their audience, especially on social media. Like, usually that's an easy win. So if a company is like, I can't because of child labor laws, or I can't because I'm concerned about liability or insurance, what if it was contained? What if the student wasn't around any of that equipment? Would that still be an option? And could this student help you out? And if you're really concerned about on-site, what if we did some sort of blended opportunity where it could be remote most of the time? And maybe if you're visiting a client or going somewhere else, we could have the student visit there as well. So I think it's one of those listening to what the problems or the concerns are, and how could you be innovative in addressing those to still create opportunities with the actual business?
Yeah, Chrissy, you make a ton of good points. There's a lot to unpack. I was actually just reading about a part-time employer that provided tuition assistance for different degrees that students would go back to school for or to college for. And it was interesting, the programs that they were willing to support, lots of them had nothing to do with what you would think the core aspects of the role, like logistics, and they needed engineers, and they were willing to support that. So I think, like, thinking outside of the box in terms of the local company that we're partnering with has a number of different departments where students can work, and they don't just have to do that core work that you might think of. I also want to steer in just a little bit different of a direction, because we have elementary leaders who are listening today. And our audience is wide, from K to 12 and even higher education leaders. And I think that elementary folks often think they're off the hook or out of the equation. Can you talk about what this looks like in like K to 5 environments? Because you had mentioned guest speakers and some other things. And I want to highlight that for people as far down as pre-K and kindergarten, where I believe the conversation should start about career exploration.
Mm-hmm. Well, I first want to point out that I don't philosophically believe that we need to be asking elementary students to commit to a career. The whole purpose of career learning at the elementary level is really just exposure. The research I just found the other day was talking about a student's lifetime should have 84 different careers that are individuals even that they are exposed to make informed decisions to actually have a successful career and to be able to navigate the changes that come in adulthood. So think about, like, that's a lot. If you would pack that into 9 through 12 or even 8 through 12, like, having those early career opportunities is key. And one of the interesting conversations I had during the initial Perkins 5, we had to do some outreach to write a state plan, came from a local nonprofit who said, we cannot get middle schoolers to think about service-oriented careers. We cannot even get them to open their minds to working in a nonprofit world. And I understand that because there's confusion even just within that term itself is high schoolers. So to have middle schoolers understand that. When it comes to elementary, it is such a critical time when we're making sure students are proficient in reading, writing, and math so that they can become successful and access programming as they move through. But it's also a critical time to not only to work on behavioral skills as well as those social skills and have access to careers. My messaging specifically for elementary would be, you have a packed schedule. Use what you have. You are already experiencing careers in some capacity. Could you make some minor adjustments to make them purposeful and intentional, not for students again to commit, but to get them to think about it and to pause, and then it's something that they can remember if it was truly memorable later on in their life. So I'll give you a couple of examples. A common one that I see universally is we have all these safety days, police, fire, ambulance. Firefighting is one of my favorite ones because the kids get to go on the truck and try on the outfits, right? So if we know that we're going to have a fire safety day, stop, drop, and roll, that is critical. We're not eliminating that. But maybe before they come, we read a picture book on what it means to be a firefighter and have kids just talk about, like, what do you want to know about firefighting? When our local firefighter comes to talk about the career, ask them to spend maybe 5 minutes talking about why they love their career, why they love firefighting, and then offer opportunities for students to ask questions. Afterwards, we're already working on literacy. So they where they draw a picture and then they try and phonetically put out a sentence. What if the topic was on the firefighter and what they thought about the day? Or would they ever see themselves as a firefighter and why or why not? Again, things that you're already doing, we're just making a minor adjustment to it. And again, not every kid's going to be a firefighter or commit there, but it's given our students an opportunity to prepare their thinking before the firefighter comes, to take advantage of understanding the career as well as fire safety. And then afterwards, just taking a moment to pause and think about, what does this mean for me? I have just walked you through designing a work-based learning experience. And all I'm saying is that's maybe different is we're asking the firefighter to talk, we're reading a picture book, and then instead of a different sort of writing reflection, we're just tying it back to this. And that's what I would encourage us to think about at the elementary level is not packing one more thing in, but how can we make minor adjustments to what already exists? Because that's how we make it sustainable. I can go through other options, but I don't want to take up all the time on that.
I think that those are great ideas and suggestions, and we're talking just about exposure. You know, we want students to be exposed to as much as possible with some depth so they have a little understanding because it just will continually build as they go through the system. So I love the example. I love the idea. We actually just started a fire science program at one of our high schools just because in our county and in our state, it's grown so much in population. The way we've done it in the past just needed to change. So just getting the exposure is critical. Christy, we love to ask our guests some leadership questions, and just switching gears a little bit, would you mind going into, you know, what inspires you? You know, what motivates you? This can be a person, a book, a podcast, things that you, you know, get into that really motivate and inspire you.
When it comes to work-based learning, I have to say I am still very much motivated from my work as a coordinator. I mean, the original program, so I know this is the start of my book, the original program that I walked into was a glorified work release. It was kids who were struggling to graduate, put them in this class, go, you're already working a part-time job on the weekends and evenings, you're in credit, you'll graduate, you're good. It wasn't great. Like, I mean, I did the best that I could, but seeing those same students in those same part-time jobs that they hated years afterwards, I'm like, why? Because that's all they had. And I worked in a very affluent community, but these were the students who fell between the cracks of the support that was necessary. And I felt like they deserved more. I mean, here I am in an opportunity to be able to connect them to something that's successful and long lasting beyond graduation. So that's where I switched the program, grew the program, was tapped to then do it at the state level. But I still remember those faces today. I think that drives me. I think I will always feel like I have some sort of debt to those those students who didn't get it, because I know there's more students out there who are probably in the same boat. So anything that I can do to help them, I will do to help them. That being said, let me tie in. There was a book that I read a year ago that totally changed the way that I speak and write, and it's called Smart Brevity. If you haven't read it, you have to read it. It's a business communication type of book. And it really is about how are we intentional and using the time that we have to make the information easily accessible and understandable. So stop using really giant words to sound really smart. Instead of let's just get to the point. At the heart of it, what needs to happen and what do we do to incite change? And how do we express that in a way that is really about the message and not about us?
It's crazy how the universe works. I just finished a book called Simply Put, and it's a marketing expert saying, you know, more words doesn't mean a better description of something.
Mm-hmm.
And the inspiration from your past work-based learning coordinator position, I think that's wonderful. And you grew in that position and you went to the state and you grew as a state leader. So sticking with this concept of leadership that Joe brought up, can you tell us how you kind of, we always tell leaders you can't pour from an empty cup. How do you continue to make sure that you're growing, that you're learning, you mentioned reading, but are there other things that you do to say, well, this is how you become stronger as a leader and build your own capacity to help others?
I surround myself by really smart people. When I meet somebody who is super smart, I want to absorb and learn as much as possible. My very good friend, who was a former counselor, we worked together. She is one of the smartest people I know and really understands how teenagers tick and how career planning works and doesn't work. And so in thoughtful planning and conversations, I learned, gosh, if we can bridge work-based learning and career planning more intentionally together, like we could really change student learning and engagement and planning. And it doesn't have to be more work on one more person's plate, but rather than the silos, let's bring them together. There's so many thought leaders out there that, again, I guess I would say, like, I just surround myself with really smart people and don't pretend to know it all. It's leaning on other individuals as experts, but always trying to learn what are these other lanes that we have kept separate and how can we break down those walls so it just becomes education, just becomes this intertwining of learning and engagement, because that's what the real world is, right? You don't go into a career path and you only do that piece. No, I'm designing things. I'm doing layouts and colors and thinking about white space, as well as how to break down information and to propel the field forward. Like, it is not one lane. So surround myself with smart people, lean on smart people, collaborate whenever possible to produce the greatest outcomes.
I definitely want to underscore the hangout with smart people. Jim Rohn years ago said we are the average of the five people we hang out with most. So if you want to break through and get to different levels of success, whatever that may mean for the individual, you may have to find other individuals to hang out with and socialize with and really work with. So appreciate you saying that. It's wise advice. Chrissy, as we begin to wind down, if there's a way you could transform schools and put this in the context of work-based learning, what would you want to see done?
I want us to directly connect what students are learning with real, tangible pieces. For far too often, are we worried about what students will say and do and produce that we keep it so contained that students disconnect? What's the value of what I'm learning? Let's show them what that learning looks like. Let's engage them with the community. Let's show the community that there should be a blurred line where the school ends and the community begins, because that's how we build strong communities, is where we're showing the value and the connection of learning.
I love that, a blurred line between where the school ends and the community begins. And I think just ending with career connected learning, like making sure as early as possible that kids see themselves, not that some learning isn't just something that we should do to stimulate our brains, but a lot of what kids learn in school is transferable to the workforce and to the economy and to college and to university life. And pointing that out to them, it can reinvigorate them, it can re-engage them, and it can keep them engaged from an early age. Chrissy, this has been awesome. Lots of nuggets for the listeners. Is there anything else that you would like to add as we come to a close? Parting words, call to action?
Start somewhere. find something easy and get started. If there's one program that seems like you can't quite do it yet, what's something you can do? What is something easier you can get involved in? I know you can't maybe do all the things that you want to do at one time, but can you start with one career path and grow from there and build out a strategy or, you know, a series of opportunities that you want to continually add? And whatever it is scary and overwhelming, find somebody who's figured it out or reach out and talk about, like, what do I need to learn first in order to make this happen? And how do I get started?
Start somewhere, start now. This has been fantastic. You heard it here on Focus Ed. Christy Valesky, everyone, we can do a virtual and live audience round of applause for Christy. Don't forget to follow the schoolhouse302.com for podcasts, blog posts, books to read, and more. We'll be back soon with another episode of Focus Ed. Until then, stay focused. Christy, thanks for being on the show.
Yeah, you bet. Thank you for having me.
Hey leaders, before you go, one more announcement. We now have available for you our Candid and Compassionate Feedback Masterclass. Really, because of high demand, we are thrilled to offer this. This is a course that we run live and in person all the time, and leaders love it. They learn to give feedback with skills that they can use right away, including better praise to lift and celebrate your team. It's now available in a virtual online format that you can take on your own, self-paced, from the comfort of your office or home.
Here's what you'll get. There are 11 lessons with a focus on 9 candor cancellations that we wrote in our Candid and Compassionate Feedback book. These are mistakes that leaders make that we don't want you to make anymore. We'll teach you models so that your feedback is meaningful, and we'll give you tools necessary to build the culture that you always wanted. Trust us, without these critical skills, you're not capitalizing on your own capacity to lead better and grow faster. Go to the site, theschoolhouse302.com, click on Shop Courses, add this course to your cart, and start learning today.